You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. HRN is food radio supported by you. Learn more at heritageradionetwork.org.
This episode is brought to you by Roberta's, home of Heritage Radio Network for 10 years. Learn more about Roberta's at robertaspizza.com.
Darren Bresnitz.
April Jones. It's good to have you back on this side of the pond. Always nice.
I'm happy to be back, and I'm happy to be joining you again to introduce our latest episode of the Culinary Call Sheet.
Yes.
This gentleman is a dear friend of yours.
Yes. Not just a dear friend of mine, but an old friend, and one of the reminders of why I keep going back to the well of working in food TV, because it means the opportunity to work with people like Chef Del Talde.
Well, I have to say that, I mean, obviously we got to do pre-interviews and interview and do everything with him. It was really exciting to meet him and talk to him. I did not know what to expect. And so this episode was actually like a little bit of a little course for me in Del Talde and like his whole journey. And it was really nice. It was a really nice way to produce an episode, to learn so much about somebody that I just hadn't put on my radar, which is shocking considering his very diverse and vast resume.
It's a good reminder too, because I'm friends with Dale. Like, I consider myself friends. I consider that he considers me a friend. And when we've gone out together to eat or been out in the world and people stop him or say, oh, I love you on TV. Oh, I love your restaurant. Oh, I love you. I'm like, oh yeah, this guy is a big deal on TV. Not because he isn't, but because he's so nice and he's so generous with his time and he's so easy to talk to, that I forget that people have seen him on Top Chef, have seen him on Taste Made with his own show, All Up in My Grill, have seen him on endless and countless daytime TV performances, to the point where he's a chef TV star.
He's a culinary TV star. Well, where did you two meet?
I actually used to DJ his Food and Wine New York parties at Budokan.
I love
it. He used to do a Sunday dim sum party that my brother and I would DJ for years. And we've gone to Food and Wine in Miami. We've been in different parts of the world together. And we were lucky enough to work together on his show for Taste Made these last couple of years. And just anytime's in LA or anytime I'm in New York, we get to grab a bite together. But it's just a valued friendship, and he's really good at what he does. And getting to watch him over the years refine his craft and be able to cook and talk to camera and tell stories and hit his beats as a talent, it's really amazing to watch.
Well, and that's what this whole episode is about, is really seeing how somebody can get into both the culinary world, but the culinary media world, and how Del has managed to balance both, because he has a really long, diverse career in the kitchen, but he also was – multiple times he was on Bravo's Top Chef, right? He also was on Chopped, Iron Chef, Knife Fight. He was a guest judge on Top Chef. He was a guest judge on Chopped. He was a guest judge on Beat Bobby Flay. Literally, we will talk about Bobby in every episode. There's not a thing he hasn't touched. So this episode really covers how to both be a celebrity chef as well as a real deal restaurateur.
And I think he's representative of this class of chef who started as chefs, worked in real kitchens, and then found their way onto TV.
The early days of competition series, which really opened the door to the everyman.
And so this was like your post superstar Bobby, Ina, Food Network heavy hitters, and then pre maybe, I'd say, influencer new talent.
No, we both have an and. Go.
Okay, well, I want to hear your and. Here, go your and.
And it's something that's great because it informs his restaurants. It informs this other part of his life too, right? And I think that that's something that's interesting. You and I talk a lot about how people approach us and are like, you should follow me in my restaurant. You should follow me in my bakery. You should follow my food truck. And there's something to be said for that, right? Like, I think there are a lot of things people can get here, especially if they're coming from a restaurant world looking to break into culinary media.
Yeah, I love it.
What's your and?
Oh, my and was that he understands how long production days could be.
Oh. I'm on one. I got excited.
No. I just, you know, he's a guy who understands the behind the scenes and the magic in making food TV.
Yeah. So I guess without further ado, do you want to talk to your bud?
I do. He's calling us from Goose Feather, his restaurant up in Tarrytown, New York. So let's add Dale Talley's name to the culinary call sheet. Dale, it is always so great to sit down with you.
It's always a pleasure.
We've known each other now for well over a decade. We met mid-aughts in the culinary scene. Mm-hmm. Take us through what the restaurant dining scene was and what you were doing during that time.
I got to New York City 2005 to open Morimoto with Steven Starr. We got it going 2006. It was just an incredibly stressful time for me. New city, didn't really know anyone here. And I wasn't in the scene. I lived in Astoria. If you know anything about New York City, getting from Astoria to the West Side, you basically should just have a passport. But that's where I was. And then a year and a half later, 2007, I go to Budokan. I start there with Steven Starr. And that really was, I felt really at home there.
How did you discover this scene? What like pushed you to go to this level of culinary like greatness in restaurants?
I graduated in 99 from CIA and did my thing in Chicago for 6 years and suddenly found myself without a job and kind of saw it as a, like a sign from God to be like, listen, go to New York. Like New York is Mecca, you know, a restaurant.
I mean, the New York scene, the dining scene was electric at that time. Yeah. I will say WD-50 changed my life. The meal I had with, on my birthday with my brother, I would say in 2006, showed me what food could be and that there was a bigger world out there. And, you know, part of that bigger world was seeing more and more food on TV. I know that April and I had gotten our start in working on more traditional cooking shows, but what was your relationship or what was your thought with food TV at the time? Especially among yourself and other colleagues on the line?
So, you know, for me, it was really, I think, you know, we knew to give props to the original Dump and Stir shows. Like I watched Bobby and that barbecue show with him and that other dude with the overalls.
Grilling
and
chilling.
Yo, I watched that.
We all did. Yeah. We're like, what is this? Cause this isn't Julia Child.
Yeah. And there was something like real, like, I don't know. It was different. It was refreshing. You know, Emerald show, you made it feel like this was like primetime TV. Mm. I don't know. I dogged it for a while, right? You know, we all watched Iron
Chef. Sure.
And thought to ourselves, this is hard, but I want to do this. It was always something, you know, especially when you watch the original, the old school Iron Chef, Japanese version. And then you see the new version. Like, I want to do that. I want something I aspire to do. Because you felt like it was such an honor to be asked to do that show. Mm-hmm. So you're like, I want to do this. I think it was probably 2006, 2007, you start to see this new brand of like reality cooking competition show.
Yeah.
And this was season one with Harold Dieterle and Leanne Wong. And Leanne, I think, was at 66, John George's restaurant at the time. Mm-hmm. And it was just like, oh my God, like I know where these people, these are colleagues. I mean, it immediately addictive. The format was super like, was, you know, we'd seen it in Survivor. It was that format of like hers.
Yeah.
18 people boiled down to one. That's what got me hooked on that show. And it was just, I don't know. I couldn't stop watching it. It felt like, hey, if you'd worked at a tasting menu restaurant, you know, you're about to put out the lamb course and the person, you know, a four top says, I don't eat lamb. All of a sudden that person says, I don't eat lamb. So the chef turns around to you and goes, make something without lamb. That's a protein that's in the red meat world. And you got to bang it out real quick.
Yeah.
You have to figure out, you know. So it felt like a quick, you know, the quick fires felt like, oh, I know what this is. Because this is like this is partly everyday stuff. Sometimes it's but do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like there was this like real a la minute, like, style,
pressure.
Yeah,
pressure and cooking,
trial by fire.
Yeah, that they just threw it at you and you had to create on the spot. And that's like, for a lot of chefs like myself, that was addictive. Mm. That creativity was addictive. And like, that to me was super cool about it.
Well, speaking of this sort of like competitive nature and like flying by the seat of your pants, what was the audition like?
This casting was happening and I totally skipped my mind and I walked in and they were already, there were a couple, they were already closing everything up and walking out the door. And I was like, oh, I guess I'm late. And they took one look at me and go, we can do one more.
Oh.
So they sat me down and they started asking me questions. And of course, like as like a 28-year-old, you know, hey, I work at one of the busiest restaurants in New York City. You can't get a reservation for a couple months. I think I'm a tough guy. I think I'm bad. You know, I think I'm like dope. So I talk, they, you know, like, oh, how do you feel about someone like Padma, you know, judging your food? I'm like, I'm never going to let some supermodel tell me what my food's like, you know, and they're like, you know, what about someone, you know, what about, you know, Tom and all this other stuff. And I was like, listen, I'm here to win. Da, 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 da. I got a resume, you know, my just check the resume, peep the resume, my game, you know, I've been doing this for a while.
Did they see you as the villain?
Yeah. Oh yeah. They like, you are such an asshole that you will be great on the show. And I was like, wow. Okay.
Thanks guys.
Yeah.
Listen, I knew what they meant. It's not like I didn't know who I was. I knew who I was. And it was really a personality test.
Mm. What are some of the takeaways from this process, the things that you personally learned and you saw other people learn, or the common takeaways that people who've been on Top Chef experienced?
I think one of the most important things is that your voice as a chef and your sense of authorship is one of the most important things that you could ever have. Ever, period. And it should never be compromised. Never. So I think a lot of times what happens is that like you get in these competitions, you get in a group setting, and then you kind of just, you know, you want to be a nice person. Mm. Well, the reality is if someone disagrees with what you're saying, you need to speak up and say, no, I feel very strongly that this is what I want to do. And even if you don't believe in this, I'm going to do this anyway. Mm. Because I know that this is my voice, not your voice or this is our voice, but this specific dish, I need this part of the dish or these flavor profiles to sing through because it's who I am. And of course, I think chemistry always build championships. You know, especially if you're in Top Chef and you go in a group setting, you have to pick the people you're going to work with that work with the best, not the best chefs there.
Yeah.
Right? It's a difference between that. And I think that it's... Mm-hmm. So those are a couple things that I think you take away from. I think there's a takeaway that like, listen, I can do anything. Legit, nothing is too hard when you've done these competitions because they throw so much at you. Hey, in 24 hours, cater a wedding for 300 people with four people that you hate.
I know you just said you want to be yourself and maintain your authenticity, but you're also in entertainment. And I want to chat about what that actually looks like, because I think a lot of people think you will just follow them with a camera and they can do whatever they want. And that's it. But you probably had to curate to some extent how you spoke, what you did. And we know this, Darren and I, as producers and directors in this field, that we do have to find these sort of like connective tissue pieces for the show. Can you tell us a little bit about that experience, finding your TV self?
Yeah, I mean, mine wasn't that hard. I mean, I went in as an asshole and I left as an asshole. That was an easy one. Like,
the growth has been flat.
Just a bigger asshole.
It was a very lateral move.
A lot of growth in that, Dale Talladega as a TV character.
That was season four, right? That was my first season. And can I tell you what? It's a unique point of view that a lot of people have of seeing themselves act up on TV. Nowadays, it's easy to see someone act up. You just turn on TikTok or whatever, and you see people act like jerks or Karens or they act like complete morons. Before, I was like, oh, this was a very out-of-body experience. And to see my parents be embarrassed at my behavior, I change, right? But it was easy. I was people didn't like me.
Had you thought about it, though, before you went on TV? Did you think, no?
No.
So when did you actually think about who your TV self was? Or did you even realize they were asking you questions or curating your personality in any way?
Can I tell you, Top Chef really doesn't do that?
God bless.
They let you be a jerk. they just let you be it. They just turn the camera on. And that's what's so great when I hear some of the people go, oh, I was edited in a big event. Really? What can I tell you what does get manufactured is I think when they got to spice things up, all of a sudden a couple bottles of tequila show up at the house that weren't there. And you're like, oh, where was this? You know, what was that? You know, sleep deprivation. That's one thing that I think that they know how to do is
to set the scene.
They make you tired.
Yeah,
they get you tired. When you're done competing for 16 hours, we're going to do interviews for another 3 hours.
Yeah. I mean, and if you're watching it and you know how it's put together, you know how long the days are. You start looking at what people are wearing and the outfits and you go, they cooked all day and then they did interviews.
For that hour of television, we all filmed.
For the hour of television.
Anywhere from 16.
While this is all going on, you're on TV, the show airs, you're still working in the restaurant. Were you able to use this in a stepping stone in any way for your career?
I mean, it was crazy. We were literally throwing like parties, viewing shows and parties like to watch it. And I was like, you're getting recognition that you never thought you had before. And especially for someone like me who like literally is kind of invisible, right? Like this, I think I have a nice personality, but
it's tricky.
It is. And it takes someone who's a lot stronger than myself to deal with it because I didn't deal with it well. But, you start to understand that this is a real platform, right?
Mm.
Millions of people have seen you or are seeing you. It's going to be on syndication. You know, after a season airs, and you're like, oh, okay, I guess that's it. Then all of a sudden, you start to get messages from Brazil and Australia and Dubai. And people are like, oh, I saw you in season 4. And you're like,
wow.
Whoa, the reach is crazy, right? I started to understand like, hey, what do I need to do to make this into, one, a career and make this a positive thing. And to get some of my goals of owning my own restaurant.
So what were those things that you understood in order to make that happen?
You leverage your visibility in meetings when talking to investors and, you know, hey, look, you know, people are going to see me from Top Chef. Or you meet people who are honestly will say, hey, I saw you in Top Chef. Can we talk about the concept that I have? And it goes from there. And now you start to ask for things.
Mm.
You start to learn how to ask for things, right? I think even that TV world, if you don't ask, you don't get, right? Some of us just think that things are going to be like, they're going to see how hard I work and they're going to hand me this.
Mm.
They're not. That's not how life works.
Nope.
No.
You have to demand and you got to ask and you have to like put your foot down and say, no, this is how it's going to be. That really helped in that aspect of my career.
And so were you able to use your newfound TV fame to start your own restaurant group?
100%. And that's how a lot of investors knew who I was to start the conversation.
Mm-hmm.
We watch you on Top Chef. Great. Hey, I have a business plan. I'm trying to open a restaurant. Here it is. They will have already done the work too. They'll Google you, see you on TV and say, hey, you killed it on these TV shows. What are you doing next? It's a way in, right?
A way in.
Absolutely.
You get shown the door. It's your job to open it and start it from there. But at least it started conversations that I know I wouldn't have had with other people. And I told every person that hit me up, you got 1 year. You got 1 year until this next cycle happens.
Mm.
Then people are going to forget. Unfortunately, people are going to forget about you.
Yeah.
So make the most out of it. Squeeze as much juice out of this fruit as you can.
Yeah.
But also set goals and realistic goals. And like, you know, like I want a cooking show. So does everybody else. And you better not go into a meeting and you better not start it with, I want to be the next Anthony Bourdain.
Thank you.
No. Thank you.
Nobody wants to hear that shit.
Nobody.
I want to be the next Anthony Bourdain. Well, there was only one. Are you him? There's only one. And that person, unfortunately, is not around anymore.
I know.
Find your own story.
And
have your own story. Have your own journey.
Create your own narrative. Yes. You know, create, go and draw off the things that that are powerful in your life. Like you're an immigrant or this, you know what I mean? And I spoke to those people about that and be like, talk about that because that's the story people want to hear. They don't want to hear that you go to, you know, you went to this country and you ate this food. No one cares about that. They'll just do it themselves.
Yeah.
So if you had to give any sort of advice, like what would you say to chefs who are opening their own restaurants but also want to do TV?
If you want to get on TV and you're opening a restaurant, I would say try and not open the restaurant anywhere near any time you have to be shooting.
Hmm.
The restaurant needs your complete and utter attention. And then when it's running and you have a great team, then you can back off. The media part of it, you have to give it just as much work as restaurants. Practice. If you want to get into a cooking competition, you better work your ass off to get on there. It's not one of those things where it's like, hey, I'm blessed with talent. I'm going to walk on and be the best. No. So you got to be at home practicing. You have to be in front of the camera. You have to look at yourself speaking these lines. You have to look at yourself as a host if you want to do hosting. And you need to practice and practice in other people's kitchen where you don't know where anything is, because that's the scene, right? Oh, you have 20 minutes to cook something, but you're in your own home kitchen. You know where everything is in your own kitchen. That's not what this is.
Right.
If you want to get into that world, you have to be on, you have to do the work of saying, okay, I just worked a 10-hour shift, 12-hour shift at work. Now I'm going to spend some time on my YouTube channel.
Yeah.
So people understand that I can do this. I can do this. And that's the kind of work it takes and dedication if that's what you want to do.
Absolutely.
It's not just going to be like saying it and it happened. It's like, hey, grind and do the work.
Yeah. It's a full-time job.
100%.
I want to know actually what the difference was for you from going from being a competitor on television to a judge in the competitive culinary world.
I think the main thing was be coherent. Like, people are relying on how descriptive you are about the whole situation, not just about what you're doing in the moment. Like, play out the scene, describe what you're seeing, describe what you're tasting, more importantly.
Yeah.
And then be critical.
As a judge, did you feel like you had to practice how to speak in a balanced way, since you weren't really coming from it solely as your own point of view?
The TV world needs goods and bads.
Yeah.
Whether you like it or not. You know, whether you think this dish completely sucks, you have to find a positive about it, because there has to be a reveal, right? It can't just be like the person in the 15th minute of a 30-minute show can't be like, that guy lost because they just shit all over those three dishes he made. You have to give him something. But as a restaurant owner and as a chef, I knew how to be critical and to give the good and the bad. You know, you give the Oreo cookie. I knew how to do that. So
yeah, oh, yeah.
I love the Oreo cookie.
Yeah, the good, the bad, the good. So
wait, is the cream the bad?
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
the sandwich too. I always call it the sandwich.
The sandwich.
Good, the bad, the good.
Yeah.
And
you sandwich that bad news and the good.
So you've done a lot of work on editorial, competition driven TV, but you've also delved into daytime TV, which is a very specific type of not just cooking, but recipes as well. It's usually tied to a holiday or a season or something like that. How did you transition to daytime TV? And how did you have to change what you were cooking, or were they coming to you for what you were cooking?
So listen, if you're a chef and you're saying, I want to start doing these, you lost. Yo, you're lost. Like, it's one of those things where like, yo, you don't go out to try to do this. It just, hopefully you're doing well where your PR company and your PR firm get sent these asks. Daytime cooking TV, it's awesome. It gives you a platform. You know, the my mom in Chicago can see me at 10 o'clock in the morning. But
love it. Show all of her friends.
Yep.
They love it. My mom, why didn't you tell me? I was like, Mom, I don't know, it just skipped my mind. And then you fit a recipe or something you're doing into their style, right?
And are you writing your own recipes? Are they helping with stunts? Good. What's going on with that?
You give them a recipe and then they recipe test it, and then they send back comments like, hey, this worked, this didn't work. Hey, this fish sauce, someone in, you know, Dubuque, Iowa, yeah, can't find it. Is there a substitute you can have for that? So, you know, it has to be so, you know, Top Chef and like something like Knife Fight, it's kind of niche-y, right? It's raw. Where when you do daytime, you better be for everybody, because that's where they're gearing it towards. Like, you know, when you can't have like, oh, it's a Thanksgiving, and I'm using it now because I'm going to start getting the inquiries about it. Your Thanksgiving recipe. You can't have like, yo, this is a chaat masala cranberry something. People are like, yo, what's chaat masala? Nobody, you know what I mean? Like no one.
But even doing it. Cornish game hen or something that isn't like a turkey recipe or something like that. But you also have to be a chef who's confident in your food and know that this is one part of you that's on TV.
Correct.
Versus the whole part of you that's being represented.
Yeah, this isn't you, right? This is like a part of what you do. It fills everybody's need, right? These daytime guys, they need a chef to kind of like talk about recipes for Thanksgiving. And then you're a chef that like, you know, you have Thanksgiving and you want some press.
So would you say your approach is that, I know you're talking about daytime TV and being able to access everybody, but we also spoke about being really authentic to yourself. And it sounds like as you moved into daytime, you're sort of finding this new lane to fit into where like, you're establishing your TV personality by accessing this major sort of middle ground in order to bring people to who you are authentically down the line.
Oh, one 100%.
Well, how did your approach help you get your show on Taste Made all up in my grill?
Listen, man, shout outs to the one and only Darren Bresnan.
I know that guy.
Yeah, I know him. I think he took a chance. He made a connection. He also understands my POV. Like, I'm not gonna show up to a show like Olive My Grill and just do like, we're doing chicken with barbecue sauce on it with a coleslaw and some, you know, we're gonna flip it on its head and make people think about it. And season one, I thought we really did that, and season two, I thought we also did that.
What was your approach that you took in hosting that made that happen?
Be as creative as possible while shopping at your local grocery store. That was one of my approaches.
Really?
What can I get at a grocery store and be creative as possible? And not like my grocery stores that are like super, you know, like I'll go find anchovies, or I'll find those little brine shrimp to make kimchi at this Korean Hannam or H Mart.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
No.
You're talking the Ralphs, the Acme's, the Safeways.
Be as creative as possible at Albertsons, at Acme. And that's how you're going to connect with more people.
I love that.
Because, yeah, you could get on the show and, yo, go find tamarind leaf, fresh tamarind, and baby ginger this big. Who's going to follow that recipe?
Nobody.
It's impossible to find, right. You know? But if you say, hey, you know what? Go find green cabbage and go find Worcestershire sauce, and you can make an ill version of a banchan. Mm. And it's easy to make, and a fermented cabbage. And people are like, I have that in my
fridge. Oh, hell yeah. And then they're excited about it.
You know, especially when you're tasked with doing something like a grilling show, where there's been a ton of grilling shows before that, it's a balancing act. Because on one hand, you know that people want a surefire, impressive burger, hot dog, chicken breast, corn. On the flip side, you also want to be putting your own spin on it and putting your own personality on it, along with the stories. Where did that balance strike for you?
I think the balance, it has to start off with something that I want to eat.
Yeah.
Yo, if you want to eat it, if I want to eat it, I'm going to be excited about it. I'm going to be excited about talking about it. I'm going to be excited about cooking it. All those recipes were legit things that I cooked at home on a grill. So that's how it started with me.
I love it.
And I think that's how you balance the creative side with, you know, what is going to strike a chord with the viewers.
Yeah.
And you have to think about, like, what is the network has needs. Right?
Yes.
Yes.
I don't think people understand it's a balance between you as the talent,
yep.
the production company that's hired to bring in this whole crew to shoot it, the network, and sometimes multiple networks that are banking on this to be a success, not to mention whether they need something for a stunt or for a brand or for something else that's going on. Like, there are so many voices involved in making a series.
Totally. All of that aside, when Darren came to me with Olive in My Grill and he said, hey, you know, we want to talk to you about this and, you know, make some recipes. It was easy because I was just like, let's just focus on making dope food right now. Really good, tasty, dope food that's interesting.
Yeah.
That's doable, right? Not like a 15-step, let's pull some tweezers out, let's put some
microwave. Of course.
Wild.
It's a grill, so let's make food that's actually approachable to make. And when you talk about approachable, right, I think people think, oh, you're selling out, you're making this like white chicken breast on a thing. No. It just has to be interesting and easy enough for someone to execute it on a Tuesday.
Yeah.
That's how I approach it. And hopefully it translates.
Yeah, I think it does. It's a great show.
Now you have your restaurant, you have your TV career, everything's blowing up. How were you able to find balance that really benefited both of those career paths?
You don't. You never find balance. Something's going to suffer. Something suffers. And whether it's your personal life, it's your mental health, whether it's the state of the business, whether it's you not being able to give everything to when you show up for a shoot, being prepared.
And look, we all know that running restaurants is a financially tenuous game. It is very razor thin margins. It's really tough to get people not just to come in once, but to come back.
Mm-hmm.
So did you see running restaurants and then also being on TV as working together? Where in some ways it's marketing the restaurants so people can experience it, and that you found success by balancing both.
Totally. Opening restaurants and being on TV, they both feed into each other. It's just at the level when you start to have more than a few restaurants.
Sure.
It's like, that's when it gets really hairy, because then that person's like, oh, I don't see him here. It's like, hey, well, he has three or four restaurants. How can he can't be everywhere at once. And your investors are saying, hey, you're spending more time on TV than you are at the restaurants. And you're saying, hey, you know what? Like, I'm not really getting paid at the restaurants. Like, I didn't get paid from the restaurants for like a year and a half.
And you're like, I got to go on TV to feed my family.
Feed my family. I got to make a book. I got to, like, restaurants, the overhead on restaurants and how much it costs to run a restaurant. It's not enough for everyone to eat when you have three partners, and it's like, not everyone's going to get there. So I volunteered. I was like, I'm not going to take a check for a while, because I am making money off my side stuff, which became my main gig. Right. And I think that's what people understand. It's like, that became my main gig, and I had to feed my family through all the media that I was doing. So there is no balance. Like, you know, the short answer is there is no balance, right? You just try to do the best that you can and give everything that you have on that day. That's my thing, is I don't look 2 months, 1 month, whatever in advance. You have to look at what you have to do today and give that your all, and then move on to the next. So
yeah,
those are the things that when you see someone who grinds as hard as Bobby, do 2-a-days and then show up at his restaurants, then you start to respect, like, yo, that dude's, one, has an amazing team behind
him.
Yes.
He does.
To keep him in line. I use him as such an example because he's done the dump and stir. He does the competition. He does all these things. But, like, legit, you know, go to a restaurant of his and you'll eat and you'll be like, this is good.
Yeah.
This is really good.
You know? Mm-hmm. Well, in each of these mediums, both restaurants and media or television, are such competitive fields. So there are a lot of people that both want to succeed in the restaurant industry, as well as in the TV industry.
As in the hospitality world, I think a lot of times this is not advice, but it's something that I think I've learned that I want to tell other chefs and people who are in this world. Right. You got to take care of your mental health, but your financial health. And I think it's something, because a lot of chefs don't believe they'll, like, live past 30 or 40. They just say live fast, die young. But when you start to get to this point, is the sooner you can be financially responsible for your, you know, for the rest of your life, the easier this ride becomes, because you're not relying on check to check. You're saying, hey, you know what? I've set a foundation. And it's easier said than done. But, like, financial literacy is so, so important. And for a lot of chefs, we just don't have that, right? A lot of times we're not in restaurants that offer a 401k. Our benefit packages are trash. Yeah. We're like, listen, you got to do that work on your own. And it makes it there's an end of the road. There's a light at the end of the tunnel with this. And I think a lot of chefs, they don't get into that. And it's terrible. But we have to have that. So we're not on the line at 50.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No,
you can't do that. You can't be on the line. You can't be on the line past in your mid 40s. Say that.
Honestly, it's the same for production.
Yeah. At some point, you got to be behind a desk.
Yeah. You can't grind it out for 12 hours, like, you know, back to back to back, and, like, just getting yelled at by, like, you know, video villages screaming in your ear, other people screaming, you know, the brand screaming in your ear. You can't do that. Like, just your mental health, you can't do that. You have to guys get to your level. You have to be part of the creation and executing the creation, not, you know, there when it's being created.
Yeah.
In the early stages.
I love that.
I'll say this, guys. For me, for my personal experience, listen, and I ain't won shit. I didn't win nothing. I was successful I feel like I was successful in the fact that people remembered who I was. Remember my personality and remember my food. I've been more successful now than I've ever been. And I do believe that, like, those things go hand in hand, right? I have one restaurant. I can give it all my attention, but I can also do my media stuff where people can see me and go to that one restaurant and say, people DM me and say, hey, are you going to be there on Saturday? Because that's when most people go out to eat at restaurants. I can say, yes, I absolutely will be there.
100%.
Yeah. People right now, it's great with social media. They can DM you directly and say, hey, I made this from your cookbook. I made this from your cooking show. And it turned out amazing.
Yeah.
And that to me is winning. When you've done this, that to me, and I told my wife, I go, my God, I can't tell you how many people on Twitter, like, or on Instagram DM me a picture of something they saw me make on All For My Grill. And it really warmed your heart. You're like, wow, I really was able to, like, I was there, or I influenced you into getting, and that's the whole ethos of the grill. When Darren and I were talking about the grill, it's like, hey, what are we trying to do? I'm trying to get you to spend more time grilling, eating with your family, making your own food.
Yeah.
And if we did any of that, it's a major success.
So we have a little segment called A Little Takeaway, where we ask some fun follow-up questions, speed round, if you will. We're going to kick it off with, what is your favorite item to put on your writer or to eat off the crafty table?
Writer is easy. Favorite items, too. It's Nike ankle socks and sugar-free Red Bulls. Got to have those. The ankle socks, they're like, yo, did you not bring socks? I'm like, no, I just want to know that you, like, actually care about it. off the crafty table, you know what I've been getting in on? Those kind bars. Okay. It sucks because then, you know, like, HMU will, hair and makeup will come in and be like, yo, you got mad. You got, like, raisin hair.
You got some chia seeds. You got some sesame seeds. Some
dehydrated
peanuts.
Organic blueberries in your teeth. Yeah. What is one of your guilty pandemic purchases?
Man, this stupid thing's chilling in my basement. It's not the Peloton, but it's like, it's a bike. And it was like $1,200 and I just haven't even touched it. And it sucks.
Got to get back on that bike. What's the first job you ever had?
I was a telemarketer at like 14. I would call houses and be like, hi, do you want to take a survey? Like, no.
That's how you got your tough skin before going into restaurants.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure.
What
yeah.
is your favorite item to bring to a dinner party?
It's like my version of a paella. Or a tadig, you know, like the Persian rice. It's dope because then, like, you know, you bring it, it's still in the pot, and you flip it over, and you're like, ah, it's always a stunner.
Good to know.
Mm. So, what is your karaoke song?
It's so bad. Is it Third Eye Blind Jumper? Is that the group?
Yeah.
So bad, dude. I learned that. You know, I'm like a straight hip hop kid from old school. But when I went to culinary school, there was like this white kid from Arizona, and he was all about this band, and I was like, yeah, what the fuck is this music? And I'm like, oh man, this song's dope, man. I like this.
What is the ultimate ingredient?
Oh, rice. I eat rice every day, and I never get sick of it. Can never get sick of it.
What is your final meal?
Oh, buckle up, because it's like, okay, it's a giant ribeye from a tavern. It's an 8-piece spicy with mashed potatoes and dirty rice from Popeyes. It is my mom's chicken adobo. Like the full lobster boil set, corn, potatoes,
sure.
Yeah, shrimp and clams, carbonara.
Yeah.
From where?
Bucatini, of carbonara. Course. And for dessert, it's the chocolate pie from Strip House, or chocolate cake from Strip House.
Mm-hmm.
Pecan pie with vanilla ice cream on it. And a pack of Now and Laters.
What flavor Now and Laters? Just the variety?
The whole. Every single one. Every single one.
So you want to rip all your teeth out before you go.
You're going to die after that. So
if you're not dying already, you will after this meal. So
that's why you do it. So you feel so terrible. You're like,
just end it.
All right. Who is one of your biggest inspirations?
One of my biggest inspirations. It's my parents, my mom and dad. They are, I learned how to work hard from them. I saw the amount of, you know, how much they sacrificed for me and my family. And my mom's a fabulous cook. I mean, so good. And I know it's super cliche, but like, dude, my dad used to get up at like 5 o'clock in the morning, be at work by 6, come home by 6. Mm. Filthy. He fixed industrial boilers. So he would walk into like a Kellogg's factory in Gary, Indiana, and have to fix and weld like these things. And you know, when you see your old man do that, and at all hours of the day, someone will call him and be like, you know, 2 o'clock in the morning, he'd get a phone call, something wrong happened at this factory. He'd go to work, and like, you know, that shows you like the kind of fortitude you need to work in a restaurant.
Mm. Is there anything that Darren and I haven't talked about yet that you have coming up next that we should know about?
Yeah, I'm opening. I've got a project in LaGuardia opening a noodle bar and bar in the new head house.
What a full circle moment to start in LaGuardia and now you're there. Yeah.
To fly into New York City, be in LaGuardia, and my first time there, and then all of a sudden opening a restaurant there. It's pretty cool, and it's I'm honored to be part of it. And the new head house, if you haven't been there, Terminal B.
Wonderful. Congratulations.
Congratulations.
Dale, it was so lovely to get to know you so much better. Thank you so much for coming on and talking to us and sharing with all of our listeners your path, which is so unique and delightful and hilarious. This has been wonderful.
You know I'm happy.
You guys are the best. You know, this is an amazing show because it's one of those things that none of us really wanted to talk about. Mm-hmm. Because when like guys realize that this is what's going to get you more butts in your seats and it's going to help you spend time with your kids and your family. Guys, attack this with, if you want or passionate about this, attack this and be good at this because it's a real skill, being in front of a camera, and it's a need. There's a need. And it's great. Great you guys are doing this.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you so much, Dale.
This episode is brought to you by Roberta's, home of Heritage Radio Network for 10 years. Roberta's was founded in Bushwick in 2008 and has become one of the most iconic restaurants in the country. HRN made its home inside of Roberta's in 2009, and together they have become part of the DIY fabric of the neighborhood. Roberta's, the pizza restaurant, is open for lunch and dinner 7 days a week and serves much more than just the famous wood-fired pizzas. Their team dreams up new salads, pastas, and sandwiches on the regular. Roberta's Tiki Bar is alive and well in the back garden, serving up frozen drinks in the summer and hot toddies in the winter. Stop by the bakery and takeout spot next door for fresh breads, sticky buns, and pizzas to go. And of course, there's the 2 Michelin-starred Blanca tucked away in the garden for truly daring diners. But Roberta's also extends beyond Bushwick, with multiple locations in New York City and now in Los Angeles. You can also find their frozen pies in grocery stores around the country. The spirit of Roberta's, like Heritage Radio Network, is everywhere. Here's to many more years of pizza-powered radio. Learn more about Roberta's at robertaspizza.com.
I have to say, that was so nice. It was so nice for me to learn so much about Dale because it's a little embarrassing. I just didn't know much about him. And my God, that guy is full of a lot of information.
And I think he's so generous with it. To be so self-aware about who he was, or at least his TV personality was, because it was two different people, and how that's evolved and who he is now.
Dale's evolved with the times. He came out when competition came out, basically. He was in the like early phases of competitive series when it opened up to the everyday man, and he filled an archetype, and then he evolved as culinary programming evolved.
But what I really like about Dale, and what I've seen him, especially on All Up In My Grill, is that he really is trying to teach people how to cook. And like, he's always trying to give tips and tie things to like his own life. And it's a great way to connect. Yeah.
Yeah. Give a little peek into his Filipino background, like opened up communities to experience new things. And I think that he continues to do that in his television programming.
Yeah. Him talking about sharing his experience with chefs who have been on Top Chef or on TV and are like, oh, I thought this was the top of the mountain. And he's like, it's top of a mountain, but there are other peaks to climb. Mm-hmm. Here's what I've learned. Here's how I've learned it. Here's the mistakes I made. I'll give you my knowledge and then you do with it as you will. And I think that that is really, really warm and encouraging to hear, that even though he found his fame in competition, he doesn't see himself with competition with other chefs who are also on TV.
Yeah. I think that he is a really great example of this sort of like dream that is hard to reach, that a lot of people imagine this is like, to hear the things that you hope it is, right? That somebody gets out there, they break in, they work hard, it changes their life, it opens up doors for them, and now they're turning it around in other ways, like you just said, to bring more people in.
That's a beautiful thing. Well, April, always a pleasure.
Always a pleasure. Thank you for sharing your friend with us.
You really paused on that always a pleasure with me. Sometimes a pleasure.
Mediocre good interaction.
Yeah.
No, I'm so grateful that you brought him in. It's always exciting when I get to learn something along with everybody else. And huge shout out to Heritage Radio Network, as always, for partnering with us and supporting us in this process. to our listeners, what should they do, Darren?
They should subscribe, rate, tell their friends, and if they have any questions or want to hear about any aspects of the food TV world, please get in touch, drop us a DM, send us an email.
Yes, and as we are rapidly approaching the finish line of the first season, Darren and I will be doing a Q&A episode where we answer some of the questions we've received from listeners with regard to the season. So now is the time, my friends. Throw any questions or thoughts you have our way, and we will do our best to address them in our final episode of season one.
Okay, cool. Listen to wherever podcasts are available so you can add your name to the culinary call sheet.
This show is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. Keep in touch at heritageradionetwork.org/subscribe.